Sophia walked along the bar, pausing to shove the Colt Navy into the empty holster of a man standing there.
Thanks for the loan of the hogleg, Dandy.
He snatched his shapeless old hat off.
You're mighty welcome, Miss Sophia. Would you really have shot them fellas if they didn't do like you told them?
What do you think?
I think I would have done just exactly what you said, ma'am.
Sophia looked back at the kid again and coolly crooked a finger for him to follow. He glanced around the saloon as he did so. The place had success written all over it, and in the rugged frontier community, it was hard to believe that a woman owned it, and such a young and attractive woman to boot. The kid followed Sophia through a door at the end of the bar. It opened into a short hallway with several more doors. She swung one of them back and revealed a comfortably furnished office with a big desk and chairs upholstered in red Moroccan leather behind and in front of it. She closed the door and motioned for the kid to take a seat in front of the desk while she went behind it.
Do you invite all your customers back here to your private office?
The kid sank into the leather chair and casually cocked his right ankle on his left knee.
Only the ones I find interesting. You don't look like the sort of saddled tramp or grubline rider who usually drifts into Bristol, Mr. Morgan.
You don't look like most of the saloon owners I've run into either. They tend to have jowls, mutton chop whiskers, and big red noses.
Amusement danced in her astonishing green eyes. She had a tiny beauty mark just to the left of her mouth. At first glance, the kid had taken her to be very young. He would have said that she was barely out of her teens. Now he saw that she was somewhat older than that, 25 or 26 maybe. That was still awfully young for her to be running a saloon.
What are you doing here?
I could ask the same thing of you.
Huh, isn't it obvious? Making money hand over fist, that's what I'm doing.
I just meant that it's unusual to find a woman.
Don't start on that. You're probably like everybody else. You think I ought to find myself a man, settle down, and start popping out babies. Well, that's not gonna happen. Ever.
That's none of my business. I was just commenting on the fact that there aren't many saloon keepers like you.
You were avoiding my question, that's what you were doing. What brings you to Bristol?
Just passing through.
And if I said I don't believe you?
I'd say it's not considered polite to call a man a liar. A woman in the saloon business probably ought to know that.
That gun on your hip, are you any good with it?
Good enough to have stayed alive this long.
What would you have done if Brecken Early had slapped leather instead of starting that rough and tumble? Could you have killed them both?
I don't reckon we'll ever know, will we?
Suddenly, the door behind the kid opened, and instinct brought him out of the chair.
Sophia, I wanted to...
The newcomer stopped short, his eyes widening in surprise and alarm as he found himself staring down the barrel of the kid's Colt.
Mr. Morgan, don't shoot! He's a friend.
I'll echo that sentiment. Please don't shoot me.
The kid lowered the gun and took his finger off the trigger.
Sorry. Habit.
A rather dangerous one for those who find themselves around you, I'd say.
The kid holstered his gun.
Most people don't sneak up behind me more than once.
Jefferson didn't sneak up on you. He came into my office to see me. And while it would be preferable if he knocked in the future, he didn't do anything wrong.
Sorry, Sophia, about not knocking.
The man wore spectacles, and they had slipped down a little on his nose. He put a finger on them and pushed them up again.
It's just that I heard people talking about how you were out in the street waving a gun around a short time ago, and I wanted to make sure you were all right.
I'm fine. A couple of Malone's hard cases were making nuisances of themselves again and brawling with Mr. Morgan here. I sent them packing.
I see.
Mr. Morgan, this is Jefferson Parnell. Jefferson, Mr. Morgan. I'm afraid I don't know his first name.
Parnell extended his hand.
I'm pleased to meet you, Mr. Morgan, especially since you're not pointing that gun at me anymore.
The kid noticed dark stains on Parnell's fingers.
You're a newspaper man, are you?
That's right. How did you know I'm... The ink stains. Occupational hazard.
The kid shook hands with him. Parnell had a strong grip. He was a big man, a couple of inches taller than the kid, and broad across the shoulders. His dark hair was rumpled, and several strands fell across his forehead. He pushed them back with his left hand, and the kid got the impression that that was sort of a nervous habit with the man, like pushing his glasses back up his nose. Parnell didn't look like a journalist. As big and strong as he was, he looked more like he ought to be swinging a pick in a mine or wrestling a load of freight onto a wagon. The kid knew you couldn't judge a man by appearances, though. Some of the deadliest gunmen in the West were small and mild-looking, more like clerks than killers. He himself didn't look like a former business tycoon who was still a very rich man.
If you were mixed up in that trouble, maybe I could get an interview with you, Mr. Morgan.
I'm not interested in being in the paper. Sorry.
Mr. Morgan's just passing through. At least that's what he claims. Personally, I think he's another hired gun that Malone has imported.
I thought you said those men I had trouble with, Breck and Early, work for Malone.
They do. But you just got into town. You didn't know them, and they didn't know you. All of Malone's men are sons of bitches. Trouble follows them around. Is that an accurate description of you, Mr. Morgan?
I'm not a hired gun.
Well, judging by what I saw a few minutes ago, you're fast enough on the draw to be one.
That doesn't mean anything.
If you say so.
Who's this fellow Malone you keep talking about anyway?
Terrence Malone. He has a ranch near here.
But that's not all he is. Or all he used to be, I should say. He was a pirate. Black Terrence Malone, they called him in those days.
A pirate? You mean like from a storybook? The Jolly Roger and the Bounding Main, all that?
There was nothing fanciful about his career, Mr. Morgan. He and his crew of brigands looted and sunk a number of ships in the Caribbean. Malone was a very dangerous man, and he still is.
How do you know about this?
From another rancher named Owen Starbird. Starbird is a former British naval officer who hunted Malone down and put him in prison.
Then what's Malone doing here in Rattlesnake Valley?
He served his sentence and was released.
He came here to settle his old score with this fellow Starbird.
According to Starbird, that's the case. Malone tells a different story.
What does Malone say?
He claims he just came to the valley to settle down and make a new life for himself. But if that were true, why would he bring some of his old pirate crew with him?
He brought more pirates with him?
That's right. He hired a number of gunmen, too. Hard cases like someone would hire to fight a range war. Sure, that's why Miss Kincaid here thought you'd come to Rattlesnake Valley to work for Malone.
So I looked like a hard case.
You got that Colt out of its holster in a mighty big hurry. What are we supposed to think?
Just because a man knows how to use a gun doesn't mean it's for hire.
I meant no offense.
Sophia looked like she'd made up her mind about something and rose to her feet.
You bought a drink for the house, Mr. Morgan. Why don't you let me buy one for you?
And then?
And then you can go about your business.
You're kicking me out of your saloon?
Not at all. You're welcome to stay as long as you want. I just don't want to keep you from doing anything you want to do. You should come and go as you please. Do we understand each other?
I think we do.
He stood up as well and turned toward the door, then paused.
Since it was two of Malone's men I had trouble with, maybe I'd better ask you if there are any more of his men out there who might be holding a grudge against me.
Because of that ruckus with Breck and Early? I don't know who might have come in while we've been back here talking. I don't recall seeing any more of Malone's men in the saloon when the fight started.
Much obliged.
He slid a hand in his pocket and brought out a double eagle.
Is this enough to cover that round of drinks I bought for the house?
She nodded. He handed it to her, and then turned and left the office. Parnell hurried after him.
Don't mind Sophia. She can be a little hard to get along with sometimes. It's because she has to put up such a tough front in order to make folks take her seriously. Not many women own businesses, you know, and certainly not saloons.
I suppose that's true.
The kid and Parnell went into the main room of the Rattler's Den.
How'd she come by the place?
I don't really know. I've only been in Bristol about 6 months myself, and even though Sophia and I have become friends, I don't really feel like I can ask her personal questions, if you know what I mean.
I do. She might bite your head off if you did.
He went to the long hardwood bar and found an empty space. Parnell moved in beside him. One of the bartenders came over to them.
Miss Kincaid offered to buy Mr. Morgan here a drink, Fergus.
Is that so?
From the corner of his eye, the kid saw that Sophia had emerged from the office as well, and he knew she must have nodded to the bartender. The man put his hands on the bar.
What do you have, Mr. Morgan?
Beer's fine, as long as it's cold.
Oh, cold as you'll find in this part of the country. Just one more reason the Rattler's Den is the best saloon this side of El Paso.
The bartender drew the beer and set it in front of the kid. Parnell ordered one, too. He seemed determined to make friendly conversation. The kid suspected that Parnell was still angling for a story for his newspaper. If that was the case, he was going to be disappointed. As long as Parnell was being talkative, the kid intended to get information, not give it.
Tell me more about this so-called pirate Malone, the man he came here to get revenge on.
Parnell was glad to comply. For the next several minutes, as they sipped their beers, Parnell told the same story that the kid had heard from Diana Starbird. How George Starbird had settled in Rattlesnake Valley, uncovered the springs that fed the river, and turned the place into an oasis in the middle of the West Texas Badlands. The rest of the yarn spun out the same, with Owen Starbird immigrating to Texas from England, and Black Terrence Malone evidently following, with the desire for dark and bloody vengeance in his heart.
If everybody knows about this, how can Malone get away with what he's been doing?
A little matter of proof. The Starbird Ranch, Diamondback, has lost some cattle to rustlers, and somebody has taken potshots at the ranch hands. But no one has ever actually seen Malone or his men doing such things.
I'm surprised the people in these parts put up with that. Don't the citizens here in town care what's going on?
Well, even if they did care, they'd be too scared of Malone to do anything about it. You can't expect a bunch of shopkeepers and clerks to go up against pirates and gunfighters, Mr. Morgan. Anyway, the days of everyone in Bristol feeling beholden to the Starbird family are over. A lot of people have moved in since George Starbird died, so they never knew him. From what I gather, his brother Owen was never popular. Folks thought he was odd, pretty much a cold fish. George Starbird had a daughter, a wildcat named Diana. All the cowboys who rode for the spreads in the valley other than the Diamondback tried to court her at one time or another. But she ran them all off. So you see, no one here in town or in the rest of the valley is going to risk his life trying to help the Starbirds. They figure that Owen Starbird and his niece are rich, so they can take care of themselves.
The kid felt a surge of anger go through him. Diana had told him how the settlers had turned their back on the family of the man who made it possible for them to live there, and now Parnell had confirmed it. The injustice of the situation and the ingratitude of the settlers rankled with the kid.
You know, there is one person in this town who might have the gumption to stand up to Terrence Malone.
Parnell inclined his head toward the end of the bar, where Sophia stood talking to the bartender, Fergus.
And that's her right there.
Sophia sensed them looking at her. She turned her head and frowned at them, then left the bar and went back through the door that led to her office.
So, you think you're going to be around here for long, Mr. Morgan?
Like I told the lady, I'm just passing through.
The kid left the Rattler's Den a short time later, frustrating Jefferson Parnell, as the newspaper man kept trying to angle for an interview. He walked up and down the streets, studying the settlement. Bristol didn't have a telegraph office, and he figured the closest railroad line had to be at least 30 or 40 miles away. The kid spotted a stagecoach station and thought about how odd it was, in that modern day and age only a few years away from a brand new century, that a stagecoach was the town's primary means of communication with the outside world. It would probably be years before a railroad spur and the telegraph came to Bristol, and the telephone lines that were springing up across the west might not ever reach that far. Something stirred in the back of the kid's mind. A canny investor could come in there, pick up some land, maybe start working to get a spur line and a telegraph office. There was money to be made in Rattlesnake Valley. That was certain. All it would take was a letter to his lawyers in San Francisco to start the wheels rolling. Then he stiffened as he realized what he was doing. Conrad Browning was the one who thought like that, not Kid Morgan. Those days were far behind him, and he was never going back to them again. Maybe he hadn't left that life as far behind as he'd thought. He came across the doctor's office on one of the streets. It was an adobe house that obviously served as the medico's living quarters, as well as his office. A sign out front read, Dr. Neil Eggers, M.D. The kid was surprised when he looked through the front window and saw a man moving around inside. The doctor should have been out at Diamondback, tending to Deuce Robinson's wound. Of course, the man in the house might not be the doctor, but the kid was puzzled enough to go up to the door and knock on it. The man who jerked the door open a moment later wore a harried expression and had blood on his hands.
What is it? Are you sick or injured, sir?
Not particularly. If you're the doctor, I just want to talk to you.
Then if you don't have a medical emergency, I'm already tending to a wounded man.
The doctor turned away. The kid grabbed the door before the man could close it in his face.
You're Dr. Eggers?
Well, that's right.
The doctor didn't try to force the door closed. He turned away, adding over his shoulder,
Oh, come in and wait if you want.
The kid followed Eggers into a waiting room, then on down a hallway. The doctor didn't realize the kid was right behind him until they were both in a small room with an examination table in it. A man lay on the table, stripped to the waist, with blood oozing slowly from an ugly bullet hole in his shoulder.
I know this man.
The kid recognized the wounded man as soon as he stepped into the room. The man lying bleeding on the table was the cowboy called Ori, who'd been sent to Bristol by Sam Rocklin to bring the doctor back to the ranch.
How badly is he hurt?
Eggers turned back to his work, picking up a wet cloth from a basin of water and swabbing at the wound in Ori's shoulder.
Well, this is his only injury. The bullet lodged against the bone. It must have been a ricochet because it seemed to have lost some of its force before it struck him. I don't believe the bone is broken. Luckily, I was able to remove the bullet once we got back here, but of course, that started the wound bleeding again. I'll finish cleaning it out, bandage it, and we can hope for the best. The young man lost quite a bit of blood out on the trail where we were attacked. He's in a very weakened condition.
The kid had already seen that Ori was only partly conscious and didn't seem aware of what was going on around him. He thought the young cowboy probably stood a good chance of recovering, though, if he didn't come down with blood poisoning from the wound.
The two of you didn't make it to Diamondback?
You know where we were going?
I was out there last night when Deuce Robinson was wounded and Jim Woodley was killed.
This is bad business. There was enough tension in the valley to start with. Now that a man's been killed, it'll only get worse.
More work for you.
More work for the Undertaker, you mean.
He pressed a pad of clean bandages over the wound in Ori's shoulder and looked at the kid.
Who are you, sir?
My name is Morgan.
You're a friend of Starbirds?
I never heard of them until yesterday. From what I've seen since I rode into the valley, though, looks like they could use some friends. Since I had a run-in with Terrence Malone and his men myself...
The enemy of my enemy is my friend, huh? There's an old Chinese proverb to that effect. Did you intend to stay in Rattlesnake Valley permanently, Mr. Morgan?
Only if I'm buried here.
And it seems the wisest course of action for you would be to ride on and forget about the Starbirds and Terrence Malone.
Nobody ever accused me of being wise. Why don't you tell me what happened to you and Ori?
We were about halfway to Diamondback when someone started shooting at us from some rocks on top of a little hill. Ori tried to return fire, but he was hit almost right away. I travel by horseback, not in a buggy like some doctors, so I was able to grab his reins when he dropped them and lead his horse. He managed to stay in the saddle as we galloped away from there as fast as we could. After we'd gone half a mile or so, I stopped to put on a temporary dressing on his wound to slow the bleeding, and we headed back here to town.
There's still a wounded man out there who needs your help, Doctor. More than one by now, in fact. I reckon I can get you through if you're willing to risk it.
You can get me there and back safely? You guarantee that?
You're in the business of life and death. You know there aren't any guarantees.
Well, I can't come with you. It's too risky.
I thought your doctor swore an oath.
We do. The saddle maker's wife is going to have a baby any time now, and I'm afraid it's going to be a difficult birth. The little daughter of a teller at the bank is running a high fever. Now, those are just two of my patients, Mr. Morgan, and I'm the only physician in Bristol. In this whole part of the state, actually, I have a lot more people depending on me than just a few cowboys at Diamondback. I did swear an oath, and I'm honoring it by not getting my head shot off because of some stupid range war.
It's not just a range war. Malone is out for vengeance on Owen Starbird.
That's none of my business. I'll help anyone who shows up on my doorstep, but I'm not going to put my life in danger recklessly. I wouldn't have gone with Ori in the first place if I'd known I was getting into.
The kid bit back the bitter response he could have made. As far as he could see, his only choices were to either accept the decision Eggers had made, or pull his Colt and force the doctor to accompany him at gunpoint. He knew he wasn't going to do that.
All right, Doctor. Take care of Ori.
Of course. I'll do everything I can for him. Are you going back to Diamondback, Mr. Morgan?
I am.
There is one thing I can do. I'll pack up some medical supplies you can take with you. I don't know what they have on hand out there, so if they're facing more trouble, it might be a good idea to be prepared.
Thanks. I'll pay you.
All right. That's probably a good idea, as a precaution.
The kid knew what he meant. If Black Terrence Malone had his way, Owen Starbird might not be around in the future to settle any debts. And the same was true for everybody else at Diamondback, too. The kid left the doctor's house a few minutes later, carrying the bag of medicine, bandages, and other supplies Eggers had gathered from the cabinets in his office. He walked back to the Rattler's den, but didn't go in the saloon. Instead, he tied the bag onto his saddle and unwound the buckskin's reins from the hitch rail. He was about to lead the horse over to a nearby water trough so that it could get a drink before he rode out, when Sophia Kincaid pushed the bat wings aside and stepped onto the porch.
Leaving town so soon, Mr. Morgan?
I think I've seen enough of Bristol.
I'm sorry we've disappointed you.
Not you, but I can't say I'm all that impressed by most of the other folks around here.
You don't even know the people who live here. You don't have any right to say something like that.
I know that nobody's got the guts to stand up to Malone except maybe you. Is that why you wanted to know if I was a hired gun? You want to pay me to go up against Malone?
She came to the edge of the porch.
Say that Malone succeeds in destroying Owen Starbird. Do you think he's going to be satisfied with that? He'll wind up running this whole valley, including the town.
And you're afraid he'll crowd you out?
I made this saloon a success. I won't have some bloody-handed pirate coming in and forcing me to take him on as a partner.
You think that's what Malone's got in mind?
I know it is. He's already dropped some hints about how I need a man around to help me run the place. As if I ever needed a man for anything.
Seems to me you were just doing some hinting of your own about me helping you.
I might be interested in hiring you, Mr. Morgan. But you'd be working for me. We wouldn't be partners.
No thanks.
You don't want to work for a woman?
I don't want to work for anybody at all. I'm just passing through, remember?
All right then. Go on and leave. When the time comes, I'll fight Malone by myself if I have to.
Good luck.
The kid lifted the buckskin's reins and led the horse toward the water trough, not looking back toward Sophia as he went. Even though he had turned down her offer of a job, she wouldn't be fighting Malone by herself, he thought. With any luck, it would never come to that, because he intended to put a stop to Black Terrence's reign of terror before Malone could take over the entire valley. He just hadn't quite figured out how to do that yet. The kid followed the main road west out of town. He felt eyes watching him as he rode out, and he remembered what Diana had said about Malone having spies in Bristol. He didn't doubt it for a second. As Malone gained more power in the valley, there would be more and more people in the settlement who were eager to curry favor with him. The kid figured that before the day was over, somebody would be riding out to the Trident Ranch to tell Malone everything that had happened in town. Of course, Malone probably knew some of it already. He would have heard how Breck and Early had clashed with the kid, and they might even have told him how Sophia had run them out of town, although it was possible they would balk at admitting that they had backed down to a woman. As soon as the kid was out of sight of the settlement, he veered the buckskin off the trail and set out across country. Malone didn't have enough men to cover every possible approach to Diamondback. The kid intended to find a way through the ring of gun wolves that Malone had thrown around the ranch. He rode north until he came to the Severn River. That didn't take long, since the river and the main trail paralleled each other through the valley, the distance between them ranging from a half mile to a mile. The kid reined in and studied the stream for a moment, trying to decide if it would be a good place to cross. The Severn had a decent current in those places where the banks were fairly close together, telling the kid that the springs in the mountains back to the west pumped out quite a bit of water. He turned his head to gaze toward the eastern end of the valley. Something tickled in the back of his mind. He put the thought away, since he couldn't quite grasp it, and moved the buckskin forward. It was more likely that Malone would have men watching all the fords, he thought, so he would cross here. He wasn't sure how deep the river was, but the buckskin was a strong swimmer. A few moments later, the horse emerged from the stream. The kid continued to ride north for another mile or so, then turned west. The terrain was more rugged than it was around the headquarters of Diamondback, but there was still enough graze for the cattle he saw here and there. All the kid's senses were keenly alert as he rode. He knew that he might run into Malone's men at any time. He pulled the Winchester from its sheath and rode with it across the saddle in front of him, ready to use it if he encountered any trouble. His eyes constantly roved over the surrounding landscape, searching for dust that would mean riders, or the glint of sunlight on metal that could indicate a hidden gunman drawing a bead on him. He pulled the buckskin to a stop. The reports came from somewhere in front of him, and he guessed the distance at less than a mile. That was too close for the sounds to be coming from another attack on the ranch headquarters. He was on Diamondback range now, though, so he figured Malone was to blame for the ruckus, wherever it was. The kid heeled the buckskin into a run. He galloped hard for several minutes, then pulled the horse back to a walk. He didn't want to charge right into the middle of a battle without knowing what was going on. The shot sounded a lot closer, so after a minute more, the kid brought the buckskin to a stop and swung down from the saddle. He dropped the reins, knowing that his mount would stay ground-hitched, and started up a wooded hill. His hands were wrapped tightly around the Winchester. Gunfire still rolled out like thunder somewhere nearby. The kid could tell that he was getting closer to it. He reached the top of the hill and saw that it was actually a long ridge that dropped down to a grassy flat on the other side. At the foot of the ridge, on the edge of the pasture land, stood a crude cabin with three walls built of mud-chinked logs and the fourth of stone. The cabin didn't appear to have any windows, but the kid saw several rifle barrels sticking out through gaps between the logs on the side that faced the ridge. Flames spurted from the muzzles of the weapons as the men inside the cabin fired toward the ridge. They had good reason for those shots, the kid saw. Gunmen were scattered behind the boulders and trees that dotted the slope. They poured a concentrated barrage of lead at the cabin. The kid put a tree between himself and the sound and pressed his back against the trunk. It figured that the bushwhackers had left their mounts out of the line of fire with a man or two to hold them. He didn't want to be spotted, so he took his hat off and edged his head carefully around the trunk for a look. The horses were in a clearing about 20 yards to his right, below the crest of the ridge, so that no stray bullets could find them. The kid peered through the gaps between the trees and saw the animals moving around restlessly. Most horses, even ones used to gunfire, would probably get a little spooked by the continuing racket and the reek of burned powder in the air. That meant the man responsible for holding them probably had his hands full keeping the horses calm enough so they wouldn't bolt. He wouldn't be expecting anybody to come up behind him. The kid darted through the timber, working his way toward the horses. For him, to conceive of a plan was to act on it. Caution had its place, but being hesitant could be deadly on the frontier. The trick, as Frank Morgan had explained it to him, was to move fast, but not be too reckless. The kid had no doubt that the cabin under attack was a Diamondback line shack, which meant that the men inside it rode for Diana Starbird and her uncle. The attackers had to be Malone's men. He didn't know how long the defenders could hold out, but he intended to even the odds a little. Circling through the trees, the kid came up behind the horses. He paused to count them. 10 mounts, and 2 men holding them, not just one. That meant there were 8 gunmen hidden on the ridge above the cabin. The kid went all the way around the horses to come in from the north. The men wore dusters and had their hats pulled low over their faces. A frown creased the kid's forehead as he saw that they had their bandanas tied around the lower half of their faces so that the colorful cloths served as masks. He supposed they were worried about being recognized. He remembered that Malone was trying to carry out his campaign of revenge against Owen Starbird without leaving behind any proof. The former pirate had spent years in prison. He didn't want to take a chance on ever going back. The kid used the horses themselves to conceal it. He stepped around the animals and came up to the closest of the two men before the hard case even knew he was there. When the man spotted the kid, he dropped the reins to claw at the gun on his hip. The kid struck first. He slammed the rifle butt against the side of the man's head. The second man had heard his companion's startled reaction. He didn't try to brush his duster aside and reach for a pistol. Instead, he grabbed a sheathed Winchester on one of the horses and yanked it free. The kid snapped his Winchester to his shoulder and fired first. The slug drilled into the man's chest and threw him back against the horses he had been holding. His finger contracted involuntarily on the trigger, but the bullet tore off harmlessly through the trees. The man fell to the ground, dead. The kid kicked the bushwhacker's rifle away, then spun toward the far side of the ridge. The gunman had to have heard the shots and would likely send someone to see what had happened. But by the time anybody could get there, the kid had put the second part of his hastily formed plan into action. He snatched his hat off his head and slapped it against the horse's rump. Yeah! The animals went into a panic. A couple of them bolted for the top of the ridge, and the rest followed, galloping wildly through the trees. The kid ran after them. The horses scattered as they started down the slope. Some of the bushwhackers were foolish enough to act on impulse and jump out of cover to try to stop the runaways. The kid saw a man's hat fly off as blood exploded from his bullet-cored head in a crimson spray. Bringing the Winchester up again, the kid dispatched another gun wolf with a slug through the body. Then return fire forced him to duck back into the trees. Bark flew from the trunks around him as lead chewed into them. Morgan ventured a look and saw that 3 of the men had managed to latch onto mounts. They leaped into the saddles and galloped away. The kid lifted his rifle and threw a couple of shots after the fleeing men, but they darted into the trees and over the ridge, and he was pretty sure he hadn't hit any of them. Considering the damage he and the defenders in the line shack had done to them, he didn't think there was much chance they would double back and attack again. He kept a watchful eye out, though, as he went to check on the man he had knocked out. A grimace pulled at the kid's mouth when he saw the blood that had oozed from the man's eyes and nose and mouth. He had busted the varmint's skull, all right. The bandana mask had slipped down, and the man's hat had fallen off, but the kid didn't recognize the hard, beard-stubbled face. The same was true of the man he had shot. He wondered how many hired killers Malone had working for him. Of course, hard cases weren't in short supply in that part of the country. Malone could just recruit more men to replace the ones he'd lost. The kid went back down the hill to fetch the buckskin. He led the horse up a slope. The kid slid the Winchester back in the saddle boot and emerged from the trees into the open above the line shack. He held his right hand in the air above his head, open palm out, to show that he was a friend. Several cowboys carrying rifles came out of the cabin, and one of them waved him down the slope. the kid approached the man who had signaled to him.
I reckon you're the fella who stampeded them horses.
You ride for Diamondback?
Damn right we do. Say, you're the hombre who rode in yesterday with Miss Diana. The kid Morgan, right?
The kid nodded. He recognized a couple of the men. They were among the ones Rockland had left to keep an eye on the ranch when he and the others had left that morning to trail the men who'd raided Diamondback headquarters the night before. The attack on the line shack was the second act of open warfare in less than 24 hours. Obviously, Malone had run out of patience and intended to escalate his quest for vengeance on Owen Starbird. That made it even more important that he get back to the ranch house, the kid thought, as he glanced at the sky. It had been a long day, and a lot had happened. Nightfall was only an hour or so away. The way hell had started to pop in Rattlesnake Valley, there was no telling what the night might bring. The Diamondback hands wanted to know what the kid was doing and why he had happened to come along when he did. He thought they were still slightly suspicious of him, despite the help he had given them, and he supposed he couldn't blame them for that. They had to be feeling that everyone in the valley was against them, and they probably weren't too far wrong. The kid explained how Ori and Dr. Eggers had been forced by gunfire to turn back before they reached the ranch headquarters. That brought bitter, angry curses from some of the men.
If Deuce dies, it'll be that damn Malone's fault.
What about Ori? How bad was he hit?
The doctor thinks he'll pull through. He'll be laid up for a while, though.
That's one more mark against Malone.
What were you fellas doing out here?
I'm just checking on the stock in the east pasture. That bunch of gunnies jumped us, and we barely made it to the line shack so we could ford up.
Anybody hurt?
Couple of bullet burns, but nothing to speak of. You say you've got medical supplies on your horse.
That's right.
We better make sure you get through to the house, then. Folks are liable to need them.
The cow ponies the men had been riding had scattered when they reached the line shack, but the animals hadn't gone far. They were grazing on the far side of the pasture. It didn't take long to round them up. The whole group started toward Diamondback headquarters, with the kid riding in the middle of the punchers. Since they knew that country a lot better than he did, he trusted them to get him back to the ranch by the best route. It took another hour to reach their destination, which meant that the sun was setting when they got there, but at least they hadn't run into any more trouble along the way.
Kid! Thank God you're all right. I was worried you might not come back from Bristol alive.
The kid swung down from the saddle. Sam Rockland came up from the bunkhouse.
Give me your horse, Morgan. I'll see that it's tended to.
Thanks.
The kid passed over the reins. He untied the bag of medical supplies from the saddle. Rockland gave the reins to one of the punchers and followed the kid up the steps onto the porch.
Ori never came back with the doctor. You didn't happen to see them in town, did you?
Matter of fact, I did. They started out here this morning but got ambushed along the way.
My God! Is Ori all right? Was Dr. Eggers hurt?
Ori's got a bullet hole in his shoulder. The doctor wasn't hit. Malone may have told his men to be careful and not ventilate Eggers. He's the only sawbones in these parts, according to what he told me.
That's right. How bad is Ori?
The doctor thinks he's got a good chance. Eggers was able to get the bullet out of Ori's shoulder, and if he didn't lose too much blood, he should be all right.
Thank the good Lord for that. Boy's got the makings of a good hand. Could happen, he lives long enough.
The kid hefted the bag in his hand.
The doctor sent along some medical supplies. He said you might be able to use them.
Rockland took the bag.
We'll put them to good use. Much obliged, Morgan. To you and the doc both.
Maybe I should go to town and see Ori.
We got shot at when we crossed the river this morning. Then Ori and the doctor ran into trouble. And I just came from the line shack over in your east pasture where the men I rode in with were forded up while some of Malone's men tried to kill them.
Diana looked sharply at the men who'd come in with the kid.
Is that true, Josh?
Yes'm, it is. A bunch of gun-hung gents jumped us. We barely made it to the line shack in time to save our bacon.
Well, thank goodness for that, anyway. You're sure it was Malone's men? Uncle Owen's bound to ask me about that.
I can't rightly say for sure who they were. There's about a half dozen bodies a-laying out there as wolf bait, and I can't say as I recognize a one of them.
I never saw any of those varmints before, but they was hard hombres, no doubt about that.
You left their bodies out there?
Their horses ran off. We didn't have any way of toting them in.
Sam, get the wagon and fetch those bodies so they can be buried properly. Even a hired gun should have a decent burial.
Ma'am, I ain't arguing that point with you. Although it seems to me that cold-blooded killers like that deserve whatever happens to them. But the plain and simple fact of the matter is, by the time we could get back out there with the wagon, it'd be plumb dark. And anyway, the wolves and other scavengers have probably been at the corpses by now. By morning, they'll be gone for sure, so it might be best just to leave things the way they are.
You're right, of course. I think this should be reported to the deputy, though.
It won't do a bit of good. he's like the rest of the citizens in Bristol. He's either already in Malone's pocket or too scared to buck him.
So you're saying we have to go it alone?
Not completely. I'm on your side.
And I appreciate that. I'm sure my uncle does too. But Malone will just keep bringing in more gunmen until he controls the entire valley. We'll fight him, of course, but the odds against us will be mighty high.
Malone's got himself a small army. You just need one, too.
That's right. But where are we gonna get him?
What's going on out there? Blasted, come inside where I can hear what you're saying. Morgan, is that you?
That's right, Captain.
Starbird balanced on his crutches and used one hand to swing the screen door open.
Come in. We were about to sit down for supper. Carmelita, Mr. Morgan will be joining us.
Yes, come in. We want to hear about everything that happened in town.
Over the next half hour, as they made a meal off a pot of Carmelita's excellent tortilla soup with savory chunks of cabrito floating in it, the kid told Starbird, Diana, and Rocklin about what he had found in Bristol, starting with the fight involving Breck and Early.
Those two are bad hombres. They would have killed you if they'd got the chance, sure as anything.
I reckon they would have tried, but thanks to Miss Kincaid, they didn't get that chance.
Miss Kincaid? You mean that saloon woman?
That's right. She owns the Rattler's Den.
What does she have to do with anything?
She borrowed a gun from one of her customers and made Malone's men back down before they could stomp me to death. I guess she didn't want my dead body littering up the street right in front of her place. That would be bad for business.
Did you talk to her?
Sure. I had to express my gratitude. I bought a round for the house, in fact.
She's so brazen. I don't like her.
Sophia's the only person I met in Bristol who seemed willing to stand up to Malone. She doesn't want him taking over the valley. Nobody else cares as long as he leaves them alone.
It's shameful the way people can simply turn their back on evil, as long as it doesn't threaten them. I thought you American frontiersmen were supposed to have more of a sense of honor than that.
Most do, but I reckon times are changing. Even out here, a lot of people have lost whatever it was that made the pioneer special. They want life to be easy. They want somebody to hand them everything and take care of them. Malone has figured that out, and he'll take advantage of it as much as he can, for as long as he can.
But you're not that way, kid. You'll still help us fight him.
Sometimes I'm just too stubborn for my own good.
He went on to give them the details of his conversation with Sophia and Jefferson Parnell, then his visit to the doctor's house, and finally he explained about finding the battle going on at the line shack.
Thank you for everything you've done on our behalf, Morgan. But despite what you said to my niece about helping us fight Malone, you simply can't.
Why not, Captain? That decision is up to me, isn't it?
This isn't your fight. This land belongs to Diana and me. It was her father, my brother, who made this valley what it is. We're bound to it by blood. And it's the job of Mr. Rocklin and the rest of the men who work for us to defend it as well. It's their duty. Although I wouldn't hold back any man who wished to ride away, nor bear him any ill will for doing so. But you, sir, you won't take our wages, nor do you have any personal reason for declaring your opposition to that bloody pirate.
I've tussled with some of his men twice, not to mention been shot at a few times by men who were probably working for him.
Is that enough reason to throw your life away?
Uncle Owen, you're talking like we can't possibly win.
What can we do? Malone has us surrounded. He's brought the hostilities out in the open. It's highly likely that he'll attack the ranch again, and even if he doesn't, he can cut off our supplies and starve us into submission while his rustlers continue stealing our stock. We don't have enough men to fight him. And the men we have are ranch hands, not gunfighters.
I never thought you'd give up. Of all the people I know, I figured you'd be the one to fight right until the bitter end, Uncle Owen.
How can a man fight when he can't even walk? When you shoved me into that room and locked the door last night, Diana, you forced me to accept the truth at long last. I'm just a worthless old cripple.
Oh, now, boss, don't talk like that.
No, Sam, it's the truth, I tell you. Diamondback is being run by a helpless cripple and a girl. What chance do the likes of us have against a ruthless pirate such as Malone?
You didn't act like that when you were captain of your own ship. You never give up. You captured Black Terrence and sent him to prison.
Yes. And now we're all reaping the whirlwind for that, aren't we?
Captain, I know things look pretty bad right now, but Diana's right. You can't give up. Maybe it's true that your troubles aren't really any of my business, but I was brought up not to turn my back on folks who need help.
I can't very well stop you, can I? All right, Morgan. You have my blessing. And my thanks. For whatever it is you can do to help us. I just hope it doesn't wind up getting you killed.
That's a chance I'm willing to take.
The kid wouldn't have been surprised if there was more trouble during the night, but the hours of darkness passed quietly on Diamondback. The fevered state of his dreams wasn't so peaceful. Once again, all the men he had killed haunted him. He was still weary when he went down to breakfast early the next morning. He found Diana already in the kitchen with Carmelita.
Have you been out to the bunkhouse to check on those wounded cowboys?
See, I think Senor Deuce is better this morning, and the other two are not too badly hurt. Junior's wound looked worse than it really was.
I agree. I looked in on him, too.
I'm sure they appreciated that.
What do you mean by that?
I never saw a man yet who didn't enjoy being fussed over by a pretty girl, especially a young cowboy.
I didn't fuss over him. Anyway, I'm not a pretty girl to the hands. I'm one of their bosses. Wait a minute. Are you telling me that some of those ranch hands are sweet on me?
They are young men. How could they not be?
Anyway, I've been told that all the hands from all the other ranches in the valley have come courting at one time or another, before Malone got here, of course. You must know how popular you are with cowboys, Diana.
I know I'm not looking for a husband. Especially not some 40-a-month-and-found cowpoke who's just as interested in marrying a ranch like this as he is in me. And who in blazes has been telling stories about me? I'll bet it was that saloon hussy, Sophia Kincaid.
As a matter of fact, it was the newspaper man, Parnell.
Oh. Well, he shouldn't have been gossiping about me. And I intend to tell him as much the next time I see him. Anyway, there's no truth to it. A few of the cowboys in the valley may have tried to court me, but not all of them. Not hardly.
Whatever you say. Carmelita, you think you could whip up some huevos rancheros?
Of course, Senor Morgan.
Diana, have you seen your uncle this morning?
I couldn't believe it last night when Uncle Owen said he was giving up. That's not like him at all. He was always a fighter, just like my father. I never knew him until he started having trouble with his legs, of course. But even then, he was eager to take any problem or danger head on.
Man as proud as your uncle has a hard time relying on others for anything. I reckon after a while, the feeling just wore him down.
Senor Morgan is right. Every man has his limits, Senorita.
The kid had come damn close to reaching his own limits when Rebel was killed. The tragedy had almost broken him. Even long months later, there were moments when he felt like she was still right there beside him, like he could reach out and touch the softness of her hair, smell the sweet scent of her, hear the caress of her voice. In those moments, he still felt the sharp pain of losing her. Some of the wounded places inside his heart had healed, but others were still there, and maybe always would be. Anyway, he didn't want to forget her. That was the most frightening possibility of all. If the pain meant she was still with him in the only way she could be, then so be it. He could live with the pain. When the time came, he could die with it.
Kid, you suddenly looked like you were a million miles away, kid. Something wrong?
No. I was just trying to figure out what to do about Malone. You know, if I rode up to his ranch, I don't think anybody could stop me from killing him.
And you'd be dead a few seconds later. His men would fill you full of lead, kid, and you know it. Trying something like that would be just plain suicide. And it wouldn't stop the rest of that bunch anyway. You think men like Wolfram and Greavy or even Breck and Early would just go away if something happened to Malone? If anything, he's been keeping them from ravaging the whole valley like a pack of wild dogs.
All right, we'll think of something else.
Sam Rockland came into the kitchen wearing a worried look on his face.
What is it, Sam?
Maybe nothing, Miss Diana. One of the fellas spotted some smoke west of here.
A range fire?
No, it ain't that kind of smoke. Looks more like somebody's lighted a signal fire up in the mountains, not far from the pass.
Greyhawk.
That's kind of what I was thinking. I've never been up to that old Injun's place, but you and your pa both told me about him. Seems like the smoke might be coming from somewhere around there.
If he's sending smoke signals, something must be wrong. I have to go see about him.
Hold on. You know that Malone's men are lurking out there. If he's ready to declare all-out war on Diamondback, I reckon he'd love to get his hands on you. With you as a hostage, your uncle and the rest of the crew couldn't fight back.
I know that, but I promised my father I'd look after Greyhawk. I gave him my word.
You sure can't go up there by yourself.
This is still my ranch, Sam. Half of it, anyway. Nobody tells me where to ride.
What Sam meant is that you can't go up there by yourself. I'm coming with you.
But Senor Morgan, you have not eaten.
Thanks, Carmelita, but it'll have to wait. Sorry.
I'm coming along too, ma'am. And I'll get some of the boys to ride with us, if you're bound and determined to go up there.
No, Greyhawk doesn't want a lot of people around. He doesn't trust anyone except me, just like he never really trusted anyone except my father. If a big bunch rides up there, it'll just spook him. He's liable to hide in the mountains where we'll never find him.
If he's in trouble, seems like he'd want all the help he can get.
I know, but I can't risk it. Kid can come along. I don't think it'll frighten the old man too much if he sees that there's just one other person with me.
All right, let's go.
You two go get your guns. I'll tell the boys to throw saddles on your horses.
A few minutes later, the kid was on the front porch carrying his Winchester and Sharps. He turned to peer off toward the west, where the mountains closed off that end of the valley except for the narrow pass. A frown creased his forehead, as something he couldn't put his finger on started to bother him. But before he could figure out what it was, Diana emerged from the house. The kid lifted a hand and pointed at a narrow, broken column of white smoke.
Yeah, it's there, all right. It looks like it's coming from a signal fire, just like Sam said. See the way there are separate puffs of smoke?
I know what smoke signals look like. I'm certain they're coming from the vicinity of Greyhawk's cave, too.
He lives in a cave?
He's a simple man. He doesn't need much or want much. Come on, kid.
Rockland came out of the barn, leading the kid's buckskin and Diana's chestnut. They went down the porch steps and hurried to meet the foreman. Rockland handed over the reins.
I still say you ought to take some of us with you, Miss Diana.
That would be a mistake, Sam. Trust me on this.
I reckon I ain't got no choice but to do that.
The kid and Diana mounted up and rode out, leaving Rockland staring worriedly after them. The sun hadn't been up long. Reddish gold light washed over the valley until it came crashing up against the mountains to paint the rugged rocky slopes with brilliant colors. It was a beautiful scene, the kid thought. But sometimes death and ugliness lurked in the midst of beauty.
You say this fella Greyhawk is a Yaqui?
That's right.
But Yaquis didn't get along well with whites, or anybody else for that matter.
Yeah, there was a time when they were fierce, according to what my father told me. Everyone in West Texas lived in fear of them. But then the Comanches pushed the Apaches further west, and the Apaches pushed out the Yaquis. Most of them went south across the border to live in the mountains in Mexico. There are always some of them down there. Then the army drove the Apaches across the border, too. The Apaches still raid across the Rio Grande every now and then, but there haven't been any Yaquis around here for years, except for Greyhawk. He's something of a rarity. In his younger days, he traveled wildly, all over the West, something the rest of his people never did. He was friendly with my father, and, well, I guess you could say that he tolerates me.
The trail started to rise as they reached the foothills. Above them, the white puffs of smoke continued to climb into the pale blue early morning sky. The kid suddenly reined in and motioned for Diana to do likewise. She brought her horse to a halt alongside the buckskin.
What is it, kid?
Listen.
The flat reports that echoed against the mountains could be only one thing. Gunshots.
No, Greyhawk.
He's probably fine. The smoke wouldn't come up in puffs like that unless somebody was doing it that way on purpose, so he has to still be alive. But we better get up there before something does happen to him. Can you lead the way to that cave of his?
You bet I can.
Diana set her horse leaping ahead into a gallop. The kid was right behind her, his buckskin pulling even with her chestnut within a few strides. They followed the main trail for another half mile, which brought them close to the spot where the kid had found the skull and crossbones and met Diana. She veered onto a smaller path that wound upward through rugged, prickly pear-covered ridges. The sun was high enough that the brilliant color splashed over the mountains and faded. The peaks were granite gray again, with greenish-black splotches where stands of hardy pines found purchase in the rocky soil. The shots had gotten louder, and Diana was on the verge of panic from worrying about the old Indian. She was cool under fire when facing danger that threatened her, but whenever someone she cared about was in jeopardy, she had a harder time controlling her emotions.
Take it easy. We won't let anybody hurt the old man. Why would Malone go after him in the first place?
I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. Greyhawk isn't a threat to anybody. He just wants to live out his days in peace. Over there.
She pointed to a cleft that cut through a ridge.
That'll bring us out below his cave.
The kid reached over to grab her reins and pulled her chestnut to a stop at the same time he halted the buckskin.
What are you doing?
We don't want to go charging in there without knowing what's going on. How far is it from here?
To Greyhawk's cave? About half a mile, I'd say.
We'll leave the horses here and go on foot through that ravine.
That'll take longer.
Yeah, but we won't ride right into a storm of bullets that way.
All right. But we need to hurry.
They dismounted. The kid tied both horses to a scrubby mesquite tree and took his Winchester from its sheath. He left the Sharps, thinking that it was unlikely he would need it. As they started through the cleft in the rock, the kid motioned for Diana to stay behind him. and to his surprise, she actually did it. Sheer stone walls towered above them for 70 or 80 feet, close enough together that the sky was only a thin blue line. The passage twisted back and forth, and within moments they couldn't see where they had left the horses. Nor could they see what was in front of them for more than a few yards at a time. The possibility of danger lurked around every bend, the kid supposed, but he didn't allow that to slow him down. He couldn't very well slow down anyway, not with Diana right behind him, urging him on at every step. Suddenly, the kid heard a horse somewhere not far ahead. He held out his free hand to stop Diana.
What's the terrain like where this ravine comes out?
It opens into a flat stretch at the base of a slope. That slope runs up a couple hundred feet to a cliff that rises straight above it. Greyhawk's cave is in that cliff, right where it meets the slope.
Is there any cover down in those flats?
There's quite a few boulders and chunks of rock that have tumbled down from the cliff face over the years. Quite a few gunmen could hide behind them and fire up at the cave, if that's what you're thinking.
Is Greyhawk armed?
He has a bow and arrow he uses for hunting antelope and mountain goats.
It won't do him much good against a bunch of hard cases like Malone's bunch.
And he has a Winchester. He's an excellent shot with it, too.
Well, that's something in our favor, anyway. Stay here while I scout ahead.
I'd rather come with you.
And if I get in trouble, there won't be anybody to save my bacon.
All right. But be careful.
The kid left her there and stole ahead. He slipped around a couple of bends and couldn't see her anymore when he glanced back. He hoped she would stay put, because he had a pretty good idea of what he was going to find.